Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, brothers and sisters. I'm on a little early than what I normally am. I'm going to be getting on the road shortly, heading to Arkansas, and I'm going to be there for the rest of the week. And got to do something there on next Sunday and also for a little R&R. But before I get on the road, I want to address something that I think needs to be addressed. This particular program today is based off a video online that was done on the Word Network by Lexi, the Lexi Show, where she had several full gospel bishops on there, and they talked about illegitimate bishops. And for a few moments today, I want to address that subject. Early today, this morning, is when I'm recording this. I'm not sure about what time of day you'll be listening to this, but I want to dispel some of the rumors, the errors, the misinformation that is being posited about what makes bishops illegitimate. There's two words I want you to remember, well, maybe three, as I dive into this morning. One of the words is anachronism. That's taking a thing, an object, or a saying, or something out of its rightful place and applying it to a time and a place that it does not fit. The next thing I want to talk about is bring out is confirmation bias. Confirmation bias is where you believe a certain thing, you're taught a certain way, and when something that is antithetically opposed to what you've been taught comes to you, your mind automatically rejects it because of what you've been taught. And most times it's hard for you to receive the truth because of confirmation bias. And sometimes you have to find a system that looks like yours and examine it first in order to be able to see the failures and mistakes in the system that you've been taught. And what's sad about it is sometimes people, after they have truth come and hit them and they have to get rid of their confirmation bias, then they still keep on with the same messed up system. And it's like, that's like two people, you know, jumping off the bridge is dangerous, but you're still going to jump off the bridge anyway because that's all you've been taught. And that's what everybody else is doing. And the other thing I want to bring up is synthesis, because there's two antithetically opposed situations, the thesis and the antithesis going on right now, and there's a synthesis of both the thesis and the antithesis so that there's no longer what we call a Protestantism and a Catholicism. Even though when I say Catholicism, I'm not talking about Catholicism in the sense of the general body, because the word Catholic is not bad in and of itself. I'm talking about a synthesis of two different dichotomies, two different systems. There's a synthesis, there's a blending of them, of both systems, without dealing with the errors in the system. And usually when the synthesis comes, usually one system usually gives way for the other system. And usually the more dominant system absorbs the other system by usually covering up their errors but not denying their errors and making the other side look like, oh, we are the truth. We what you've been looking for. We have it. We have changed. When in actuality they haven't changed, so that there can be a synthesis of both thesis and antithesis. In this particular program here, we have an issue in the church. We have an issue in the church today of a multiplication of bishops, a multiplication of apostles. And all of this for the past 40 years have come about, even though we always had people trying to be bishops, but there has never been such a craze, a multiplication of bishops like it has been in the life of the Pentecostal church in the Baptist church like it has been in the last 40 years. The last 40 years when we have been talking about apostolic succession and legitimacy. Apostolic succession and legitimacy. On Lexi's program, there was four full gospel bishops that began to talk about apostolic succession and legitimacy. And not to take away from them and what they believe, because, you know, they're welcome to believe what they believe. But that does not necessarily mean what they believe is accurate or what they believe is grounded in biblical truth. Or not just only biblical truth, but historic truth. Because if we're not careful, history, despite what people say, can be objective. History does not always have to be subjective, because sometimes when people look at history, they say history is just his story. So somebody tell their version of the story. But the problem is that we tend not to look for the people that we need to look for that have no irons in the fire, no coals in the fire, no agenda when they tell history. And so we approach people who have agendas. They tell us they have agendas. And we use those people to try to discern history instead of getting a holistic picture. That's why I like history. I study history because I realize that we have people who are trying to tell the story like it happened. We have people who are pagan in time past who was writing history to tell the emperors, to tell people this is what's going on among those people who call themselves Christians. Those people who worship on the day of the sun. Those people who gather in their Eucharistic assemblies, those people who gather and sing praises to their Christ. And so we have record, we have enough testimony that if you will be critical enough and study it enough and stop trying to be subjective in your understanding, you can get an objective view of what actually happened in history. Lord bless his name. And so what happened is we have now had people who have hijacked. We have people who have hijacked two different words, apostolic succession and legitimacy, and redefined them and took them out of context of the churches that birthed those terms and use those terms to establish an elitist-type Pentecostal and Baptist-Costal episcopacy that is not even reminiscent of what is in the Bible, that is not even reminiscent of what is in the history of the church, that not even does not even look like the bishopric that they claim succession from. Watch this. I'm going to get there in just a minute. The Methodist Episcopacy does not claim, there are a few people that as of late, because of this push to try to get closer to Rome, that have begun to try to make the Methodist Episcopacy a historic episcopacy. But if you are like me and can go back and buy these books from these various Methodist organizations, you can find in their old disciplines. You may not find it in some of the newer disciplines, but in their old books of doctrines and disciplines for their churches, you'll find statements like in the AME Church, in their older disciplines, where they said that we do not believe in apostolic succession. And if any of our bishops and clergy go back and get it, we will excommunicate them and not consider them to be one of us. Because for them to go back and get it shows that they don't believe our ministry is already valid. Devil is a lie. I'm going to get this out of here. He's going to choke me right now. And so here we have, for over 40 years, we have had people preaching about legitimacy and apostolic succession, about something that over 500 years ago, and not just only 500, because most people date the Protestant Reformation from Luther nailing the 99 Theses on the Wittenberg Church. But they forget about people like John Huss and the Hussites. They forget about the Waldensians. They forget about all these other Protestant reformers for then who rose up, and many of them was killed and murdered by the church, who claimed she was the only church that Christ established. Hello, somebody. And so here we have men and women today who do not understand what authentic apostolic succession is based on the churches that they claim to have succession from. There are three ways of looking at apostolic succession, according to one of the former theologians and archbishops of Canterbury. Canterbury had to, and York had to take a serious look at apostolic succession because Anglicanism had broken away from Roman Catholicism and introduced a reformed Protestant Catholic type of Anglicanism, Catholicism called Anglicanism, which became what we call the Via Media, which means the middle way. Via is way, and media, middle, the middle way. And it was supposed to be a middle way between Protestantism and Catholicism, almost like the 1500 synthesis of what is good about Catholicism and what is good in Protestantism, and they synthesized that together to form Anglicanism, a faith that was particularly Catholic in worship, but Protestant in theology. And so for as long as Anglicanism acted like it was simply the Church of England, the Pope in Rome never had an issue with that church. As long as Anglicanism acted like, as long as Anglicanism acted like it was just still the Church of England, the Pope had no issue. But the moment the Canadian Church wrote to the Archbishop of Canterbury seeking pastoral guidance on some issues that she was having, the Archbishop of Canterbury called together the first Lambeth Conference in the 1800s. And slowly, what was formerly the Church of England that was scattered around the world became known as the Anglican Communion. Until sometime in the late 1800s to the early 1900s, the Pope in Rome came up with a document called Apostolic Curiae. And in Apostolic Curiae, the Pope saw that the Anglican Communion was seeing itself as a church equal to Rome, equal to Orthodoxy. And so the Pope decided to say that Anglicanism was not valid. It was not a real church. And he said Anglicanism wasn't a real church because even though they had clergy, the clergy was not sacrificing priests, but they was ordaining preachers and not ordaining sacrificing priests. I said it again. The Pope said that they was ordaining preachers but not sacrificing priests. This forced the Archbishop of York, this forced the Archbishop of Canterbury to sit down together and to formulate a response, which they did make, towards the papal document called Apostolic Curiae. What is very interesting is that Vatican II happened, initiated by Pope John the 23rd, continued by Pope Paul the 6th, and not one time during the Second Vatican Council did any pope before or after Vatican II ever rescinded what was taught in Apostolic Curiae. A matter of fact, in some of the constitutions that was handed down from Second Vatican II, what the Roman Church did say is that there are in the world today authentic Christian churches. These churches are authentic because they have never, watch this, they have never lost the power of the priesthood. Oh, bless his name. They have valid apostolic succession. Not succession, as has been taught in the past 40 years among many of our Pentecostal brothers, which is simply being able to trace hands back to Peter, when succession is not just about tracing hands. Succession is not about just tracing hands. Succession is about tracing the chair that you sit in. That's your, not just your ordination, but your chair. Like, for instance, we have a bishop in Atlanta. We have a bishop, Roman Catholic bishop in Savannah. And those bishops call themselves the blank number of bishops of this particular diocese in Atlanta, or the diocese in Savannah, or the diocese in Mobile, the diocese in Birmingham, Alabama, the diocese in Jacksonville, Florida, the diocese in Tallahassee, the diocese in what's some of the other cities, the diocese of Orlando, the diocese of Miami. Are you hearing me? The diocese of Baltimore, the diocese of Washington, D.C., the diocese of Boston, are you hearing me? The diocese of New York City, the diocese of Brooklyn. So each one of those bishops consider themselves the successor of the first bishop of that see. And that first bishop of that see usually can trace their ordination back to another see. And then eventually until they get to the primacy of their jurisdiction. And that primatal see usually is able to trace their ordination back to one of the 12 apostles. Not just Peter, but one of the 12. The Roman Catholic Church, technically speaking, traces its ordination not just to Peter only. Because remember, Rome is said to be founded by two apostles, Peter and Paul. Because watch this, Linus, if he is the bishop that actually succeeded, Peter was not ordained by Peter. Linus was ordained by Paul. Clements is ordained by Peter, supposedly. So you got Peter, Linus, who is a Pauline disciple, and you got Clements, who is believed to be ordained by Peter, but he undoubtedly is a disciple of Paul because Paul mentioned him and greets him in his letter. He greets both Linus and Cletus in Romans. Are you hearing me? And so here we have a problem. The problem is we have had people redefine what apostolic succession is and what true legitimacy is in the face of their Protestant forefathers. They have literally said that we needed to be legitimate, literally saying that what Mason had wasn't enough. Whatever Hayward, who founded the episcopacy and the PAW, what he had wasn't enough. What Mary Tate had in the House of God, Church of the Living God, Pillar and Ground of Truth, wasn't enough. What the bishop who founded Cool JC had wasn't enough. Are y'all hearing me? And so here we have an issue. And the issue is that people have redefined legitimacy and apostolic succession apart from what the apostolic church had said, what the post-apostolic church had said, and even what the Nicene church has said, and they have redefined it. And even now, there are two views of what validates a church. There is what we call the Cyprian view, which means that your orders are not valid if you're not connected to the church. And then you have the Augustinian view, which says this, that your ordination, what makes you a valid church is your ordination. So you have now in the Roman church and in the Orthodox church, you have a synthesis of two different views. Some of the bishops hold to the Augustinian view. Some of them hold to the Cyprian view. And some of them hold to a blended view of both and say, well, you can't really be the church unless you have valid bishops. And if you got valid bishops, then you are a valid church. And that if your bishop has succession, and if you look at their definition, because their definition is older than the 40-year-old definition that many of us are being taught, and their definition is that if you got succession, You have the, watch this, the power of the priesthood. And not only that, bishops are supposed to have the fullness of the episcopal authority. Fullness thereof. That means that there's things that a bishop can do that that elder, presbyter, priest, or whatever you want to call them, cannot do. If your bishops, as the evolving church in the around between somewhere between 70 A.D. and 105 A.D., Ignatius proposed that, and he said in one of his sermons, that where the bishop is, the bishop being the pastor, there let the church be gathered. For where Christ is, there is the Catholic Church, not the Roman Catholic Church, not the Orthodox Catholic Church, but the Church of Jesus Christ, the Apostolic Church of Jesus Christ, because the apostles set bishops to pastor the local church. And so if there's a bishop, and that's why I like this definition of Tertullian. Tertullian says that one must be able to not only trace their bishops, but trace their doctrines. So how can we have people who claim today to be in apostolic succession, tracing their succession back to Peter, tracing their succession back to the Roman Catholic Church, and like this one lady said on this YouTube video, they can't even trace their own lineage back to Africa. How can they trace their succession back to Peter? Not only that, but it is a given thing that we have Simonism in the midst of these lists of succession. We have, watch this, we have people who was illegitimate, people who were disqualified for the bishopric based on different things, the impediments they had in their life that sat on these different thrones. We had people who were straight whores. We had people who was incestuous. We had people who did ungodly things sitting on the throne, ordaining people. But you said that you got unbroken succession through the hands. And then not only that, 75 to 95% of the bishops in Rome today can only trace their hands back. Watch this. Can only trace their hands back to Rabiba. It's called the Rabiba line. That's 85 to 95% of the Roman Catholic bishops in the world can only trace their hands back. And when you get, that's why most succession lists, you don't trace the hands. You get to a certain point in the succession list, and you start tracing who sat on the throne back to one of the apostles. And watch this. Peter was not the only apostle. Peter was not a pope. There was not a pope in the church in the sense that we have Francis in the church, in the sense we have Theotokos in the Coptic church. There was not a pope back then. And so now we got brothers who sit boldly on television programs and saying, and you got these folks, they'll tell you, you ain't preaching at my church if you ain't legitimate, if you ain't got succession, when they ain't even legitimate themselves. Because if you claim you got succession from Rome, and I said it before, and I said it again, and before I take it back, I add more to it. If you claim that your succession is valid because you can trace it to Rome, then go to a Roman Catholic church and see if they will let you celebrate at their altars. They will look at you and tell you your group taught you how to dress up. Your group may be teaching you how to play the part, but you are not the part because you have not been sanctioned by us. And you don't believe, why? You can't get sanctioned by them because you don't believe what they believe. How can you claim a succession from a church that you don't even believe what they believe? You are Baptist-costal. You are Pentecostal. But you do not even believe that the Pope is who he is. Because the Roman church says there's no salvation separate from the Pope. And the way they get around it today by calling you a Christian, but calling your churches invalid, they say you are in an imperfect relationship with the church. And you need to acknowledge the Pope and come into full communion with him so you have the benefit of a full communion relationship with the papal office. To an imperfect relationship now. Through your baptism, you're in an imperfect relationship with Rome, but you're still not the church. Your bishops are still not the church because your bishops join, they claim they got succession, go to Rome and try to become one of the bishops. Rome will look at you and laugh and say, you don't have succession. I don't care if you go to Rome and kiss the bishop of Rome's hand. They will call you bishop as a courtesy. They will call you apostle as a courtesy. They will call you reverend as a courtesy. But when you join the church, they're not going to bring you in. And they only bring in Anglican priests on a case-by-case basis. But watch this. In order for Anglican priests to come in, most times he's coming in as a layman, and after a while, when they get him acclimated to the Roman Catholic system, they'll let him keep operating for a moment in the ministry, but then he has to be ordained a deacon, then he has to be ordained a priest again, and if he's married man and he was a bishop, he'll never be ordained a bishop. I told you, there's so many anachronism and misinformation out there. People are synthesizing doctrines together and not even clarifying what the appropriate and right doctrines are. That means I'm going to have to do a part two to this program because I'm not doing it. I got questions on this particular program I have not even answered yet. Trying to deal with this. Because we got people saying, if you can't trace your ordination through the Roman Catholic Church, but do you believe what the Roman Catholic Church teaches? And then if you tell me yes, then my question is, why in the world don't you join them? Because their teaching says that they are the only true church, and there's no salvation outside of them. And the only reason why you got any kind of Christianity about you because of your baptism is that through baptism they say you have an imperfect relationship with Rome. And so if you join Rome, they're going to do what they call confirmation. They're going to lay hands on you, and even though you may be Pentecostal, Baptist, and because even though you may have spoken tongues, they're going to anoint you with oil again. The bishop's going to lay hands on you and say, receive ye the Holy Ghost, which literally say you ain't really got the Holy Ghost. You think you got him, but you ain't got him. We're going to lay hands on you and fill you with the Holy Ghost for real this time, and then make you a part of the real church. And if you was married, more than likely, unless you're Anglican and you come in there married, you ain't going to be a priest or a pastor in their church. Because only Anglicans and Lutherans usually are able to go through those ordinaries to become clergy in the Roman Catholic Church. If you don't believe that that Eucharistic host and that Eucharistic wine has become the real body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ, you do not have Roman Catholic succession. You may have succession, but you don't have Roman Catholic succession. I'm not even finished yet because I haven't even really began to deal with the subject. What makes a bishop illegitimate, and what makes a bishop legitimate? Because there is a biblical answer to the story. I may have to write a book about this and really talk about this in more detail. Matter of fact, when I end up going on the apostleship, I think I'm going to have to do a whole section in that particular book on the apostleship. I think I'm going to have to do a portion of that book. A part of that book needs to deal with legitimacy in ministry and why these bishops are tracing it, going back to that. Because there is an agenda. I don't care what anybody say. There is an agenda going on. I'm running out of time. There's an agenda going on, brothers and sisters. There's an agenda going on. And people are teaching you stuff that they don't know what in the world they're talking about. Because I promise you, that's why I have a group online called Clergy Garments 2. Because in that group, I try to bring Orthodox and Catholics and others together beside our Pentecost and Baptist, so that they, when they start talking this yin-yang, they got the real folks in the group can tell you, hey, y'all ain't got what y'all think y'all got. We don't see that. We don't recognize you as bishops. Because we at Coab have been doing Pentecostal meeting greets with the Orthodox. They've been trying to get some of us over. They talk that because of some of us in the Coab, some of our beliefs are close to them. Not everybody in the Coab, but a few Coab members have released close enough to them. They have talked about the possibility of some Coab members becoming archpriests, not bishops. If they're bishops, they wouldn't be bishops. They would become archpriests. But they still have to be re-Christmated. I got to finish this another time. This is Bishop Thomas Henry. And for the past 30 minutes, you have been listening to The Apostolic Voice.